Hi, and welcome to the Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest news in dermatology, exclusive interviews with leading experts, and a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes of clinical trials, research, and innovation. I'm your host, Emma Andrus. In today's episode, Drs. Kashi Oza and James Street delve into the topic, does food trigger eczema? Oza, an associate professor of dermatology and pediatrics, and the director of pediatric dermatology at NYU in New York City, and Treat, a professor of clinical pediatrics and dermatology at the Perelman School of Medicine and an affiliate of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, participated in one of three great debates in Peds Derm at the 2024 Society for Pediatric Dermatology annual meeting in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. The duo shared insights from their debate and pearls for clinicians related to allergy and eczema.
I'm Kashi Oza. I am an associate professor of dermatology and pediatrics and the director of pediatric dermatology at NYU in New York City. And that's me.
I'm Jim Treat. I'm a pediatric dermatologist. I'm a professor of clinical pediatrics and dermatology at Perelman School of Medicine with my main affiliation at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. That's me. Yeah. And we talked about a debate over kind of whether foods trigger atopic dermatitis, which is a very challenging thing to kind of decide a right or wrong on, but it's just a good conversation. And I think the highlights, honestly, are that we both actually feel very similarly about this, but we chose a side to take just so we could kind of have a debate about it. And I tried to talk about the idea that because atopic dermatitis is mostly a skin barrier issue with some inflammatory, obviously, response and some primary inflammatory that maybe leads to skin barrier issues, that neither of those things are probably directly being affected by foods with the current knowledge that we know. But you can get secondary itch because when you eat foods that you're allergic to, you scratch and then you scratch your eczema and make it worse.
Agreed. I think one of the reasons they chose this topic is probably it's one of the most common questions like we get as pediatric dermatologists. Atopic dermatitis is like the most common thing I believe we see, about one in five kids. And at least for us in practice, like a lot of families kind of conceptualize the condition through this idea that it's driven by a food, the diet, the type of diet that they have. And so I feel like we're always immediately programmed to be like, okay, let me like reframe this for you and be food is not the problem here. You know, the skin barrier is inflammation. These are our core things. And so I kind of fell on the sword a little bit to take the angle of what doesn't normally feel supernatural to me, but is to, and the argument was like, is there at all a possible chance that a food could have a role in triggering? Because we're not talking about causing the issue, but like what role could food have in triggering eczema? Because, you know, is it wrong 100% of the time, even though families think it's a possibility? And so I ultimately just basically came out to what Jim just said. It's like, I think there are probably diverse ways in which itch may be triggered. Whether it's a contact with something that's irritating your skin or an exposure to something you have you're sensitized to, if it could generate itch through biologic mechanisms, which we talked about, then I think you can kind of see more eczema. And I feel like that was our landing spot.
Yeah. And I think you did a wonderful job of just kind of validating what parents are seeing. They're not wrong. Like their children sometimes eat foods and they get more itchy and their eczema gets worse. But is it causing eczema or is it causing an urticarial mast cell histamine type response that's then making them itch and scratch, which then is breaking the barrier? And so, you know, it's the same. The parents don't care. It's the same thing. It's just it matters from our standpoint about how you target it and like how you kind of like treat people, et cetera.
Right.
So I think it's important to validate for parents that what they're perceiving is, you know, certainly possible. I also think that it's very reasonable to explain that like people with atopic dermatitis are more likely to have food allergies.
Absolutely.
And so, like, you know, do they cause each other? Maybe not, but they're both in the same child, and we're holistically treating the children. So we're,
right.
you know, we're not always addressing food allergies because we're not allergists, but we're like talking about the idea of food allergies, you know, what to do. And
right.
Like
and we're probably on the other end where we really feel that having atopic dermatitis or having a barrier problem is actually the route in which you develop a food allergy.
Absolutely.
And so we're often talking about that. I mean, one of the things to bring some evidence to this, the conversation was to kind of, we don't do them, but our allergy colleagues very routinely to confirm a food allergy does a oral food challenge in the office. And because so many patients have atopy and food allergies, they witness actually what happens to these kids, you know? And you're right, like the biggest predictor of you having a food allergy is watching within that hour of having hives. Sometimes kids just can get itchy. You may miss that urticaria. And then there are these kind of subsets of kids who, like 6 to 8 hours after that challenge, they may also notice more prominent itching, you know, because we always conceptualize it within that hour. And then the following day, they can actually see delayed reactions where there's eczema. I didn't really talk about it, but really those didn't often exist in isolation. So like if those delayed responses, they often had tummy upset in the first hour of the food, which
but is it a delayed response to the food, which is certainly possible, or is it that it takes 24 hours of you breaking your skin barrier for your immune response to be like, I'm going to create an eczematous response to the fact that you scratched your urticaria and you're getting, you know, and it's probably all this, it's all in all tied together.
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. Certainly possible. The other thing we brought up is this thing that I don't know how many dermatologists, at least certainly in our field, our subspecialty we don't do a lot, is called an atopy patch test, mm-hmm. where the idea is that you take, just like our typical patch testing, you would take either an arrow allergen like birch or a food allergen and you'd apply it in a patch test and we'll witness on removal an eczematous morphology there. And part of it is that the sensitivity isn't great, but it's for people who are exploring the idea of food-triggered atopic dermatitis, it is, I think, something that they're looking at and probably, and I wonder what's happening there.
To your point, like, this is like well beyond what we actually talked about in the talk, but this is just fun.
Yeah.
So basically, to your point, like, if you get sensitized through your skin, that's a completely different immune response than if you get sensitized through your gut. If you get sensitized through your gut, the body's like, yeah, eat a bunch of dirt. Like, you know, I know how to deal with that. Like, you know, your food is not always going to be, you know, clean out of a package historically.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you get sensitized through the skin, the body's like, infection, risk, I don't know how to deal with that. I don't have acids that are killing everything. Like, I'm going to create an immune response. So,
yeah.
You know, can foods cause atopic dermatitis if you smear them on the skin? Probably, but that's probably true of a lot of chemicals and substances, et cetera. Can foods cause atopic dermatitis or, you know, flare atopic dermatitis when you eat them? That mechanism is a little bit harder to understand from a skin barrier standpoint, but there's certainly an immune response that is like this holistic, interconnected cytokine milieu that's all happening at the same time. And I think we need a lot more
right.
information to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think one of the things that these types of debates bring out is we don't know. We don't even have a great, perfect definition of like what is atopic dermatitis from a biomarker standpoint, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so I think the wrong answer, which was my second slide, would just be like, nope, it doesn't. Because the right answer is to be like,
thoughtful,
you know,
stay tuned.
And like,
right.
you know, let's keep thinking about this because parents are having these experiences and we just need to like, you know, keep our minds open to think about 15 years ago, all the things that we thought were dogma, and there's just not anymore.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. The problem with food, I think one of the reasons why there's kind of so much uncertainty is because, like, we literally have, like, taken each side of the coin if you look back 10, 15, 20 years. Like, you know, in terms of foods, the American Academy of Pediatrics, when I was trained in pediatric residency, I counseled the families to not introduce allergenic foods to well beyond after their first year of life. And one of the first things I did if a kid came in, this is before I did dermatology, came in and they had itchy eczema, was I'd switch their formulas around. You know, like, and this is still a very common practice. It's hard to release yourself from some of that knowledge, you know, knowledge you accrued.
And just to call out the data for everyone, if you don't do pediatric dermatology, you're not stuck in this world or in this amazing world. I love this world. But yeah. Is that there was then data to show that if you don't introduce foods early, people are more likely to get sensitized, potentially through their skin, but sensitized to the foods and become allergic to them. And so there was a kind of peanut study that really proved that out, that early introduction to some foods, obviously in a safe manner and, you know, with the provider's kind of input, if you're highly allergic or highly likely to be allergic, can help prevent some of the people from getting sensitized and hopefully decreasing food allergies over time.
Right.
So not really a discussion for that right now, but just to understand that background, like it literally completely changed.
Absolutely.
It was like a total 180.
Yeah, absolutely. And so like parents are conflicted because now they can buy a little packet of all their potential early, you know, allergens they're introducing, but still, you know, like I think we need to have more consistent messaging, even with our referring providers, that like, what we don't like to see done is seeing a panel of IgE testing to look for what that food could be.
Broad shotgunning and being like, it was mackerel. We tested you to 37 things and it was mackerel
the
whole time.
The same goes for skin prick test, like sending someone to an allergist, you know, in hopes that they're going to do a large panel of skin prick testing, you know, to find what that is. Because one of the things we didn't probably speak a lot about because it was probably just very well known to the group, was just like the dangers of...
There's false positives.
Yeah, and the dangers of eliminating things, just as Jim said.
Nutritional deficiency, et cetera. You brought it up too. We have to guide parents better. Elemental formula also tastes like not good. some version of vomit. And essentially because of that... children sometimes don't eat it, and then they're itchy and scratchy and have atopic dermatitis and have to eat elemental formula, which is rough. So there's a lot more that we need to understand, and these debates are fun to kind of like pull out all the things that hopefully our, you know, colleagues can research and look at over time to kind of find out the right answers.
Yeah, I think a lot of it ended on like the fact that we have to really help our families understand risks and benefits of decisions that they make. But I also think the effect sizes of the intervention. So like, yes, you could find a study where empirically removing egg or something like that can show a very minor reduction of an eczema score. What happens if you just gave them triamcinolone? That reduction of that score is going to be way more. And understanding the calculus that sometimes goes in between your weighing your decisions is really important, because being able to eat and also have sensitization and you're not getting acute reactions, but you can keep that food in your diet, is probably the most important thing the families could do. You know, and I think being able to counsel families that's, you know, those are the parents that are the most relieved, where you've been like, wait a second, I have not been eating all this stuff when I've been breastfeeding. I've been doing this for 2 months. You're telling me I can eat all this stuff. And I just, you know, those are great moments for us, because it is a huge stress, like parental anxiety around diet, making a kid go to school. You know, there's clear data on bullying for kids who have food allergies. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff that exists outside of the room when we start just randomly changing things about a diet without strong data.
This was really fun.
Like this podcast, have suggestions, or want to participate in future episodes? Contact our team at dteditor@mmhgroup.com. For more Dermatology Times content, from articles to videos and podcasts, visit www.dermatologytimes.com.